There have been four large-scale attacks on European cities over the last decade or so. First, there was the attack on the Madrid train in 2004, which led to the defeat of the government and its replacement by a socialist party which withdrew the troops from Iraq. Then came London in 2005, that fateful July. Then Paris in 2015, the Bataclan affair, and prior to that, Charlie Hebdo. And lastly, on the 21st of March, 2016, a beautiful spring day, another atrocity took place in Europe. This was in Brussels, the headquarters of the European Union, and the headquarters of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. The targets, as is usually the case in recent terror attacks, were soft. An airport, a metro. 31 people, all of them innocent, were killed. And the reactions were generally the same as we have witnessed before. In Madrid, in London, in Paris, when terrorist attacks took place. What are these? From extreme right-wing politicians, it is an opportunity to denounce Islam and all those who believe in the religion, especially the ones living in Europe. So another round of Islamophobia. This time too, we have seen that response from Donald Trump, the demagogic right-wing politician in the United States, from Marine Le Pen, the leader of the Front National in France, from Geert Wilders, her equivalent in Holland, and no doubt there will be others in Germany, in Brussels, etc., etc. This response can be dealt with very easily because it's a foolish response designed to provoke and actually plays into the hands of the Islamic State or Daesh. Why? Because when you say that all Muslims are responsible for this, that it is effectively a religious act and not a political act, then you stigmatize over a billion people globally. And this stigma in Europe and the United States leads to physical attacks, leads to arrests of innocents, leads to torture, and creates a transmission belt which encourages many of those who suffer from this abuse and hostility to actually become terrorists. So it's a very foolish thing to say when politicians indulge in this sort of rhetoric. The second is also similar from the other side, which says all Muslims are not to blame, this is an act carried out by extremists, by fundamentalists, etc., etc. Well, this is closer to the mark, but actually also misses the point. And the third, which we witness time and time again, the shock, the horror, the need for peace, the need for love, the need for multiculturalism, and that too now is beginning to sound repetitive and monotonous, and though understandable, doesn't get to the roots of the problem. Now, I speak as someone who has written a great deal on these questions and spoken about them. And I've spoke to friends in cities wherever this happens. I was speaking to friends in Brussels, and their reactions were the same as friends in Paris or people close to one in London. In London, of course, when the July bombers struck, again at soft targets, the aim was to wake people up, they said, or one of their number who'd escaped and hadn't participated in the thing said, we weren't religious. We were watching videos of American atrocities in Fallujah during the Iraq War to get ourselves fired up to do something. Be that as it may, when it happens close to you, of course you're affected. What is there to do? There are no easy solutions. The same things will be said, the same editorials will appear in the liberal media. The right will do their own tricks, politicians will use it, communities, Muslim communities in Europe will feel threatened, neglected, under fire, under attack. They will be attacked. And then slowly, within 4 to 6 to 8 weeks, conditions will return to normal, to what they used to be, with this difference that there will be more security, one assumes. But the basic problem is the wars that are going on in the Middle East and in Afghanistan and in parts of Pakistan. Unless these wars stop, and one is tired now of saying this, because every time an atrocity takes place, the overwhelming response is not to look for the roots. And not looking for the roots of the violence means that you actually are waiting for it to happen again. When there were similar acts, for instance, on these islands in Britain, and the IRA launched one of its most violent campaigns of terror against London, and attempted to blow up the British Prime Minister and her cabinet, this was Margaret Thatcher, the response of the British intelligence agencies was very rapid. It wasn't to go and bomb IRA enclaves in Ireland north or south. It was to establish a line of contact and begin to discuss very soon after the attack on Margaret Thatcher, the attempted assassination, how to get out of this. Now, when you say this to diplomats or people close to power or part of it, they say, yes, but in the case of the IRA, we had very definite demands. They wanted A, B, and C, we wanted D, E, and F, and a negotiation was possible. In the case of these guys, we don't know what they want. Well, this is not true, because two of the main groups of terrorists, Al-Qaeda and Daesh, known as ISIS, have demands. They want all foreign troops out of their world. They have said it time and time again. And shortcuts to deal with them are not working. More wars are not working. More bombing raids, more killing of innocents by Western armies and Western Air Force and drones are not working. When Osama bin Laden was captured, the entire media, the corporate media all over the world celebrated. This marks the end of terrorism. Well, did it? Capturing and executing a guy who was the head of this organization, it was assumed would decapitate it and the organization would wither away and die. Instead, the exact opposite happened. More people joined it. More people carried out these attacks. Al-Qaeda grew in numbers since the execution of bin Laden. And with Daesh, a similar process can be seen, with this difference that more European Muslims, young European Muslims belonging to the different countries in Europe, primarily Belgium, Britain, France, and Germany, are desperate to be recruited to go and fight in the Middle East with Daesh, or be trained and then come back and carry out these acts. Now, in the case of ISIS, we know full well that this organization came into existence after the occupation of Iraq. President Obama, in a rare statement admitting responsibility, said, I guess we have to accept that had we not gone into Iraq, ISIS wouldn't exist. Well, this is probably true, very likely the case. I could give another figure, that prior to the American destruction and occupation of Iraq, that country had not known a single instance of a suicide bomber. Not one was reported. The figures now are nearly 2,000 suicide bomber attacks inside Iraq itself by ISIS, by rival terrorist groups trying to wipe out enemies. So the link there is very clear. And even Donald Trump, in a debate in the run-up to the American nominations for the new presidency, publicly attacked George W. Bush for having wrecked Iraq, and he said, and I quote, "The Middle East is in a very bad way. I have never known it so bad, and the Bush regime was responsible." This also is absolutely true. I think that was the first time that the American public had heard a mainstream politician say this on primetime television during a debate. Because certainly the Democrats, Bernie Sanders, of course, attacked the Iraq war, but the main candidate, Clinton, never uttered a word. So this is not something that is going to go away. The question is, what causes young people to join these groups? And I think the intelligence agencies, who themselves have recruited thousands of young Muslims to work for them across Europe, principally in France, Britain, and Germany, I assume in Belgium as well, these intelligence recruits from the Muslim communities will no doubt have informed them many a time that the roots of the hostility are political. This is not a war of civilizations. This is not a war of Islam versus European Islam versus European Christianity. This is effectively a political struggle being waged with extreme means to try and stop the assaults by the Western world on the Middle East. And on this, Trump was right. The Middle East is a mess. I, too, have never known it in such a state before. I mean, if you look at what's happening, it's just horrific. Iraq wrecked. Its social infrastructure wrecked. Its cultural life wrecked. Syria, in the middle of an appalling civil war, which temporarily has been halted since the Russian intervention and the supposed agreement between Russia and the United States to set up a more representative government, but at least there is a ceasefire at the moment. But that does not conceal what lies underneath, which is essentially the breakup of Syria, the de facto breakup of Iraq. A war is going on in the Yemen being waged by one of the closest allies of Britain and the United States, the monstrous Saudi regime, which is wrecking the country by indiscriminate bombing and killings and has occupied it with weaponry bought from Britain and the United States and from France. And recently, a Saudi royal was given the much coveted Legion d'Honneur by the French President François Hollande. So this is the role that the West plays. Now, is it only the West? No, of course not. It is also the huge vacuum that exists in the Arab world today, where the total collapse and failure of nationalism, of progressive organizations, has meant that groups utilizing religion, or rather using religion and religious ideology for their own political motives and gains, have become very dominant. You know, if you look at it on the non-violent front, the Muslim Brotherhood, which is, I've always argued, the Islamic version of, or more militant version of, Christian democracy, right-wing conservative parties, even they were not allowed to hold power democratically in countries like Egypt, where a military coup toppled them. And that toppling increased, in my opinion, the appeal of people for more extreme groups, because they said, well, these Muslim Brotherhood types are no good, they can't do anything anymore, they collaborate with the United States, they accept humiliation, we are the ones who will avenge, we are the ones who will revenge these humiliations. And in order to revenge these humiliations, they don't just target Westerners, they target their own people. And that, I think, is a point worth making, that the assaults on Muslims or people who live in the Muslim world have been far more vicious than anything that we have seen yet in a Western capital. So there has to be some solution, and it has to be a twofold solution. And it's not going to happen overnight. But if we are not even aware of it, it will never happen. And that is a combination of integrating the most deprived communities in Europe, which tend to be of Muslim origin, in society as a whole. That is difficult to do in the world in which we live, where everyone suffers, not just the Muslim minorities, but also, I would point out, large numbers of white working class people who have no jobs, who live in small towns or large towns, effectively with no hope for the future, under a domain which is described as neoliberalism, in which profits are the only motive and wealth determines who you are, what you are, and increasingly what you can get from these societies. And if they affect everyone, as we know they do, then they affect the minorities in these countries even more. Is that going to change? We don't know. Attempts to make even a few changes are frowned upon, regarded as almost a crime, denounced. And at the same time, those who refuse to make any changes and shifts within their own countries, claiming that there's no money, are very happy to spend billions in wars being fought far away from them. Well, what these terror attacks reveal is that you can no longer fight a war thousands of miles away and expect no retribution. And the retribution is awful, but the retribution is nothing compared to the scale of what has happened in the Middle East. In February this year, the Washington, D.C.-based organization, Physicians for Social Responsibility, released an important study in which they said and argued and provided facts that the death toll from 10 years of the so-called war on terror since the 9/11 attacks in the Muslim world is at least 1.3 million and could be as high as 2 million. Now, the more conservative Iraq body count groups tend to take their information only from the press. The doctors, like the UK medical magazine Lancet, like a team of medical experts from Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, have used different methods. They don't rely on media reporting, because often the media doesn't report deaths. They use other criteria for determining what the death could be. One of them, which I don't know whether they've used or not, but I certainly have done, is that in Iraq, a few years ago, the regime, which came to power as a result of the occupation of the country by the United States and was put in power by the United States, revealed that 5 million Iraqi orphans existed. That was the figure. There were 5 million orphans. Okay. Let's assume even that half these orphans belong to families who have fled, leaving their children behind, as people do in extreme circumstances, or whose parents have disappeared. They might come back, they might not. That is still a figure, leaves us with 2.5 million orphans. On its own, given the size of the average family in that region, this means under 1 million deaths, just under 1 million deaths. Just on the basis of that figure alone. Now, the scale of what is happening there and what is happening in Europe and the casualty list, there's no comparison. Secondly, and recently, there have been ISIS attacks in Beirut, where too I have many friends. A city which I have visited on numerous occasions over the years. In Ankara, there have been other attacks, and in Istanbul, most of them carried out by ISIS, and the casualties have been high. And here too, the targets have been soft targets, innocent civilians. In the case of the first Ankara attack, progressive, left-wing, liberal demonstrators marching for peace and solidarity and insisting that the government stops its offensive against the Kurdish people in Turkey. Killings, deaths. So the whole of that region is suffering much, much more than Europe. But Europe and the United States of America bear a great deal of responsibility. Even as I speak, a new war is about to be launched and has been launched in Libya to try and rescue it from the 3 or 4 jihadi extremist groups, which, including Daesh and Al-Qaeda, which control large parts of that country. I doubt that they'll be able to do it. It's not an easy thing to do, given that they destroyed the previous regime so thoroughly and killed many of its supporters. So it's going to be difficult for them to do it on their own. But they'll try. Of one thing we can be sure, thousands of innocent civilians in Libya will die as a result of this, whether they are killed by the West or whether they are killed by the jihadis resisting the West. So this doesn't stop. And as long as it carries on, I think one has to be both realistic and very pessimistic that these attacks will continue. They will target areas in the principal countries of Europe. They've left the United States alone because it's easier to target Europe than the United States of America. And it then becomes a question of what should European citizens do? Well, of course, they're in solidarity with each other. That goes without saying. We all feel the horror of the attacks when civilians die because we live here. It goes without saying. But what else needs to be done? And I think here our members of parliament, our political parties, ordinary people, civil society organizations have to have a real estimate of the costs of this war. I don't mean financial costs, because those we know and know very well. I mean the human costs, the psychological costs, the fear, and of what happens to soldiers who return from these battles, again something not reported. And many find the conditions in which they are instructed and ordered to kill people, including civilians on various occasions, too much to take. So the question cannot be isolated to a single act, whether that act is in London or Paris or Brussels, because we've seen too many of them, and there will be others. What has to be done is to bring these to an end. And here, the importance of politicians and the importance of movements from below becomes very crucial. I mean, this is something which should be discussed in every parliament. Even the European Parliament, which is not democratic, which has no powers, should at the very least discuss this question. And then let the discussion be public. And let not the public television networks of the European Union completely carve out a space in which all dissenting voices who challenge the view of the establishments in Europe are more or less kept aside, because it's not permissible anymore. I remember very well what happened when the July the 7th attacks took place in London several years ago now. There was a big attempt to stop people from saying that these attacks were effectively a response to Tony Blair's foreign policy. This was, you know, I wrote that and published it. It was published then. Today it is more difficult to say these things. At that time, people were still prepared to listen, argue, and debate, and they still are. And sections of the media responded to this, including the BBC, where these things were discussed at the time. Today, this discussion has virtually come to an end, and that is a very dangerous thing as well. Because if the European networks continue to operate in a way where one view becomes dominant, and that's the only view that is really heard, and that is the view of our rulers who are responsible for this mess, then we're in serious trouble. And we shouldn't be too surprised if in a year or less, some other European capital or some other target is hit by these people, because they will do it. They have absolutely no qualms on this score. They don't care what is said about them. They don't care whether they have a plan or a future or not. People who are prepared to give up their lives can do anything. I mean, they can cause enormous damage, even a handful of people. And American experts at Chicago University who have been studying terrorism for a long time, especially Professor Pape, have said on several occasions, most recently soon after the Brussels bombing, please do not try and imagine that attacks carried out by terrorists are religious or spiritual or anything there. Each and every one of them, he said, that I have studied are political. They have political motivations, they have political roots, their causes are political. And we need to ponder these words carefully.